broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast with Matt Sorensen and Mark Kohler. This is Matt Sorensen. So happy to be with you today. It's a beautiful autumn day here in Arizona, and I hope you're enjoying this fall weather. So I know Mark is enjoying college football. Our team is terrible right now.
Yeah.
But football season, whether your team's winning or losing, is still football season. It's still good.
I don't think it's fair that Matt says, I'm in Arizona enjoying fall weather. What he's really enjoying is summer weather for the rest of us.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, it was raining, though. It's been raining. The hurricane that went through Mexico has now been going through Arizona. So it's been raining. I know everyone appreciates the weather update. I somehow seem to slide myself into every time I start.
Yeah, I'm trying to pay for those property taxes and extra cost of living in Arizona.
Yeah, I hope the Arizona Office of Tourism is listening, because if you want to sponsor the podcast, you know where to find me.
That's right. I think for the rest of us here, we need to define fall weather for you. That's usually a crisp morning around 50 degrees, and then a beautiful 70-degree afternoon, and then cools off at night. You get to put on a sweater. Do you know what a sweater is? Do you own a sweater?
I've seen them on TV. You know, for fall for us, is when anything pumpkin spice. Just give me some pumpkin spice something, you know, a little like cookie, coffee. It doesn't matter what it is. Just throw some pumpkin spice in something and it's fall.
Yeah.
Immediately. It's magical.
Yeah. And somehow Matt translates that to, quote, fall weather, quote. So,
yeah.
We'll let that slide.
We take what we can get.
Yeah. Well, we got an awesome show, don't we? This is good.
Yeah.
Everybody, this is home office deductions, virtual office. What address should you use for your business? What's the best way to write off home office? Is it high risk? Can you do it and still have a virtual office? All the above. I mean, this is critical
stuff. Yeah. So many in the economy now, I mean, so many business owners, you know, are working from a home office, or they have a virtual office, or maybe you've got a side business or your side hustle, whatever you want to call it. And what am I designating as my office? Why should I do that one way or the other? Should I leave my personal address on there? Should I get a PO box? Should I use some other address? What does it matter for tax purposes? Can I write off my home office? Yeah. Even if I got an office somewhere else, but I do a couple of other business things, can I legitimize a home office deduction? A lot of cool stuff. We're going to try and get into the IRS has different methods for this, which I'll be quizzing our resident CPA expert, Mark Kohler. But this would be a really important show. It's one big tax item for clients, and also just kind of a good way to think structurally about your business and what you're listing as your office address. Sometimes it's not thought through as well as it should be. We want to try and give you some info today and hopefully get some answers you might have questions.
Yeah, no, I love it. Yep. And every business owner has got to at least know the basics of this topic. And whether you're a real estate investor, online reseller, affiliate marketer, this all applies to you. Much like auto deductions, which was a big hit show last week, We just, you know, we're going to try to keep it real and lively. But these are the topics no one else is covering, because they can't sex it up like we can, you know?
No, they can't. They can't. I was just debating whether this was my response that was rated for podcasts or not, you know, and I took a moment of silence. I opted for a moment of silence instead of, you know, coming back with someone that might not have been appropriate for the iTunes podcast. We're trying to keep this, the rating of the podcast for everyone.
Yes. Yes. And that's called your inside voice, Matt. That's your inside
voice. That's what it is. Okay. Your conscience, maybe.
Keep that.
I've heard of that. Well, thanks, of course, for listening. If you're new to the show, the Refresh Your Wealth podcast is all about helping you better live the American dream. Mark and I are both attorneys. Mark's also got the extra nerdy designation of CPA.
Thank you.
We're authors. And but we're also business owners too, out in the trenches as well. And so we're talking to thousands of clients every year who are business owners, investors, and trying to give you some insights on some of these really important topics. So thanks for listening. You can always find more information at refreshyourwealth.com and find prior shows. And you can also sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well.
And I think an important point is this is not just about tax and legal. We meet with, between Matt and I, we will personally talk to close to 2,000 clients a year. That's just three clients a day, 300 days out of the year. We're going to do that. And we see patterns. We see success stories, you know, disaster stories. And so you think there's other podcasts that are about building your business. Usually they're trying to sell some coaching program or they're gurus of some sort. But are they really in the trenches as a lawyer and an accountant helping business owners with real decisions? I don't know. Some are, some aren't. But we hope you find this really helpful, and we can sell you to our huge mastermind coaching circle in Vegas for $20,000 next weekend. No, I'm just joking. See, that's what I'm saying. Just a la carte us, baby, per hour.
Yeah. And of course, the podcast, and we have so many resources that are free on our website. And I think what we're trying to say too is we want, you know, this is just authentic. You know, we don't have an angle really other than good information. So, I mean, that's pretty much it. So hopefully you find this valuable. Well, before we get into the topic, we love to give a tax and legal tip. And if you'd like, I'd like to, if you don't mind, Mark, I'd like to give the legal tip today.
Go ahead and just take control.
Okay.
Matt.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's hear some guitar.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. So here's how the story goes. There's a ceramics teacher, and he divides the class into two groups. One group, he says, all right, you guys, you are going to be graded solely on one bowl. So at the end of the quarter, you're going to give me one bowl, and it is how perfect that one bowl is. I'm going to grade you on that. The other half of the class, you guys are graded on the quantity of bowls you are able to produce. How many bowls can you produce in a certain amount of time? Now they go through the quarter, and they get to the end of the quarter, semester, whatever it is, and each group presents their bowls. Now, who do you think made better bowls in the end? The group that was just focused on one bowl had terrible bowls because they were so focused on just getting it perfect, that one bowl perfect.
Really?
Whereas the group that had the quantity of bowls made hundreds of bowls. They learned there was ways better to do it than others. Huh. And by the time they got to their 100th bowl, they were pretty dang good at it. So not only did they were able to produce more bowls, they were better at the ones that they were able to produce at the end, because they took a lot of time and they were going through trial and error. And so I think a lot of business owners and a lot of people who start a business or a new product or service, whatever it may be, get so focused on it being 100% right. And they want the first thing they do before they do anything, the first product they release or service they're providing or whatever it may be, to be 100% perfect. Rather than going through the process and learning through some trial and error and just getting out there and doing it. And so I thought that was a really good example. It really teaches the value of actually doing something rather than having this analysis paralysis, I think, that sometimes we all get into, and I'm a victim of it myself, where you just don't move forward. And so it's okay to get out there, have some trial and error, and everything doesn't have to be perfect right at first. And then keep, but always be seeking to improve and do better and keep refining whatever product or service or, you know, whatever it is you're doing, and just keep refining it and making it better. So that seems to be the pathway to success.
I love it. I would have guessed at the beginning that the person that had the one bowl would have got a better grade because they had hyper-focused on it. But
yeah,
that's good.
If you think about it, if you spent so much time, you made 100 bowls, by the time you get to that 100th one, you're probably pretty good at it. And if you just sat there thinking about that one, you kept trying to tinker with it and Yeah. Apparently they turned out to be a piece of crap. So the story goes.
Well, I thought you were going to pull in a Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore analogy at some point. I'm a little disappointed with that portion of the story, but
yes, I could have tried to make some point with that.
Many of you know,
I'm a big Patrick Swayze fan, by the way. Yeah. Love Patrick Swayze.
Just Dirty Dancing.
All around cool dude.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. It's Dirty Dancing's been all over AMC or TNT remake, you know, late night. I kind of go through cycles. It's either Shawshank Redemption or
Law and Order episodes.
I for those that are new to the show, if we don't bring in at least 2 to 3 movie analogies or quotes per episode, we have failed. We really are kind of aspiring to be Siskel and Ebert. We may start to rate new movies.
Yeah.
We
may have and hey, let's even on that, I mean, how many takes do you think that Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore had in that scene? Do you think we're just going to do one take and we're just going to get this one take perfect? Do you think they took 10 takes and they took the best of the 10?
Probably all day long. I mean, I've since I haven't been on a lot of movie sets, just a few, but I've heard.
To name a few.
Shut up, Richard.
Okay.
That's a Tommy Boy quote, by the way. I've heard that this drives actors and actresses crazy because they just do them over and over and over again until the director thinks they've got the one. Okay. Well, I get the honor of a tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, well, the tax tip this week follows in line with my newest YouTube video on the Mark Kohler YouTube channel, now pushing almost 80, 90 videos on 2 to 3 minute, sometimes 6 minute type little videos on strategies all of you should hopefully find helpful. My most recent video was setting up a Roth for your children. Now, for you...
If you guys didn't know, Mark's in the movie business.
Yes.
Mark's in the movie business. So now, oh, really? You're in the movie business. Where do you work at? Blockbuster Video, Des Moines, Iowa. Bill Murray from The Man Who Knew Too Little. His brother introduces him to his hoity-toity friends. And it's like, yeah, he's an artist. He's in the movie business. Finally, someone dares to ask him, oh, what are you doing in the movie business? Blockbuster Video, Des Moines, Iowa. I know you love a good movie.
For you millennials out there, Blockbuster Video was a store where you would walk through, and on a Friday night, you'd see all your friends, and you'd be there for like an hour just talking to your friends, picking out a movie called a video cassette. And then you'd go home and watch this, and you'd have to return it the next day, and you never would, and you'd end up paying for the movie 3 times over.
Yes.
That was the model until Netflix. So for you millennials, it's called Blockbuster Video. It's kind of an interesting concept.
Went
the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah. So there you go. Now you know.
Yeah, now you know. Okay. Now, putting your children on your payroll and giving them a Roth IRA, huge strategy. For you parents out there on the line, I'm really talking about, and I know this isn't everybody on the show, so I'm going to get to it quick, is parents with children under age 18, one of your bigger concerns is, what am I going to do for college? Am I going to help them with college? What are some things I could do? And you also want to instill a nice sense of saving and financial independence and teach some financial discipline. I've made all my kids watch several Dave Ramsey videos. Of course, they've had to watch all mine when they're grounded. They hate it. But third, you want a good tax write-off. And so I'm trying to bring together the best of 3 or 4 worlds. And so for you business owners out there with kids under age 18, I want to have a legitimate job for them in the business, cleaning the office, shredding paper, helping with the rental property, mowing lawns, stuffing envelopes, helping with your social media, whatever it is. From age 6 to 18, what are they doing in the business? I want you to pay them a legitimate wage and take a tax write-off. Now, I've got all sorts of videos and books and chapters on this. So study up on that. But once you get some pay to the child, now they have what's called earned income, which allows them to open a Roth IRA. Now, once they have a Roth IRA, that continues to snowball with growth that is exponential. It's unbelievable. Watch, all of you, I challenge you to watch the Dave Ramsey YouTube video called The Power of Compound Interest. It's a wonderful video. It's 4.5 minutes long. I've shown it at so many workshops of mine, and I make my kids watch it. I couldn't do it better. It's a great little video. But this is why we want our kids to get a Roth IRA going early in life, because it just can snowball into millions of dollars, literally. Now, once that Roth IRA is in place, contributions can come out tax-free for college. The growth continues to snowball. You're teaching your kids fiscal responsibility. You're getting tax strategies and tax benefits. You're building for college to some degree. And I mean, it's money set aside. And you're getting a tax write-off to do it. And finally, the creme de la creme is you can get significantly greater returns by then having that Roth IRA of your children's, of your child or multiple children, having their Roth IRAs participate in your investing with you by self-directing. So now you can take this Roth IRA, pool it in several LLCs with your other investments and projects. Now your kids are earning a percentage of profit from the projects you might be engaging in anyway. Another podcast, another show, another chapter of a book. So what I just opened up maybe was a Pandora's box of strategies that all of you listening really need to study up on. But the crux of this one is using the Roth IRA for a child that can grow and grow faster than you ever imagined, can be invested with you, you can get tax write-offs to do it. It is literally magic. And when people catch the vision of that, they're blown away. So that's my tip today. Boom.
Matt, well, I love it, man. Yeah, I mean, it's what every kid wants is a Roth IRA, whether they know it or not. But you know what? You don't give kids what they want. You give them what they need.
Yes. Because,
you know, you're helping them. I've said this many times before. I love the families. I love it when grandma and grandpa are setting up Roth IRAs for their kids. I love helping clients and I've done this many times. You know, the grandparents are setting up an LLC with their Roth IRAs. They got their kids' Roth IRAs in it. They got some grandkids' Roth IRAs in it, and they're going out and buying a rental property or doing some real estate deal or investment. I love seeing that. And the whole family's catching the vision. They're bringing the grandkids along. Super cool thing. So, yeah. And of course, we can help you with your self-directed IRA and a Roth IRA at Directed IRA now. We're dripping that out right now. We even haven't officially announced, but go to directedira.com. We're helping clients self-direct their accounts across the country now at our own company. So it's a little short little bleep blurb there. Sorry to just drop that in, but
yeah. And if any of you have questions of recommendations of some ways to get started, send us an email, Matt or Mark. That's Matt at kkoslawyers.com or Mark, M-A-R-K at kkoslawyers.com. And it's Matt with one T. Send us an email. Some of you, it's just as simple as starting up just a TD Ameritrade app on your phone and having your kids do the same thing, or self-directing and getting a full-blown account set up at Directed IRA. And then our law firm works seamlessly with Directed IRA and setting up LLCs that can hold IRA money. So anyway, okay, we're going to get on a whole other topic. You don't watch it. Okay. Virtual address, home office.
Okay.
Matt, I introduced the topic. I think I got a handle on a way.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Okay. So here's what I wanted to say. First of all, people, you are entitled to a home office tax deduction if you are doing business in your home, your apartment, your studio. You don't have to own your home. You can be a renter. We'll talk about the method for that deduction and how you take it and where you take it shortly. But the first point you need to know is that you're entitled to that tax deduction no matter what your business address is. And that's what I want to cover first is, should you use a virtual address? Should you use mail forwarding? Do you need a privacy strategy? What can be your business address? And what is a registered agent address? Let's get all those issues off the table.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is you can have a home office deduction on your tax return. Where should you have your business address? So Matt, I'll just throw it out to you. Why don't you take mm-hmm. a stab at distinguishing those a little bit, and then I'll add yeah. to it as well.
Now, let me say this. I think depending on what type of business you have, where I mean, sometimes I'm going to have different recommendations on what you're going to use.
Good point.
For example, let's say you're a business that's you're a restaurant, okay? Okay, it's Joe's Taco Shack, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody knows it's you, Joe. You're there every day. You got a business on 123 Main Street,
yeah.
and that's where you're at. That's going to be, when we set up your company, that's likely going to be your business address, the actual restaurant address. And
let me say, you yeah. can still have a home office. We're still going to take a home office deduction, Joe.
Absolutely, because of course you're going to do some of your stuff at home. You're going to have an office right. there. You're going
to
be
we'll come to that in a minute. But just keep in mind, guys, what Matt's talking about is what is the address for public record? It's Joe Shack, 123 Main.
Right, and so that's going to be on your company when you file with the state. That's going to be your office address, your business address. That'll probably be your mailing address. Mm. Now, the last thing you have is what's called registered agent address, or sometimes called statutory agent, depending on your state. Now, that is an address and a person is listed there or company that is going to receive legal notices. So notices from the state, sometimes the IRS, or you get served with a lawsuit. These are official legal notices. They will go to who is called the registered agent. And so if you're Joe's, you know, Taco Shack or whatever, I can't remember what we had there, but
yep, that was it.
Joe's restaurant. Okay. You may say, hey, I'm just going to be the registered agent. Just list Joe as registered agent and I'm going to be at 123 Main Street and they can serve legal notices on me. And that's required. So in every state, you're going to have to list a person and an address.
Okay. And here's the point here. In a sense, is there privacy still occurring? Yes, because we don't want your home address anywhere. We're using 123 Main Street. So we're going to be very cautious to set up your entity in the proper way. This is why we get really concerned of people running to LegalZoom and clicking boxes, is because we're cleaning it up 3 months later and the client's upset going, why is my home address out there? Well, I don't know. What box did you click? And for just a few $100 more, we'll set the whole thing up with a consultation and do it right. But the point is 123 Main Street is the public address. There's privacy because we don't want his home address anywhere, even though we're still taking that tax deduction of a home office. 123 mm-hmm. Main Street is everything. And Matt, I love your example. Let's call that the retail example. We got a retail shop.
Retailer, you got an office front type thing.
Okay.
Now let's hit the next group though. Let's hit the next group of maybe I'm a real estate investor. I don't have the separate office. I exclusively work out of my home. Maybe I'm have an online business. I'm selling product online. And again, I don't have a separate office location I'm actually working out of or that customers come to. So now, Mark, this is where there's a lot more planning and a lot more decisions to be made, because sometimes the default of people is, and you can do this. I mean, you know, there's different ways to go about this, and everybody's got a little different tolerance level of privacy. You can say, I'll just list my home address everywhere. That'll be on the company documents at the state. It'll be publicly available. You may not have a problem with that. But there are options, and of course, there's benefits to being a little more private. So, Mark, what would you say are the other options for that person that doesn't have any other office, there's no location where customers go to or where they may go work at? Where should they start thinking about?
Okay, I love it. So their first and simple and cheapest option is list the home, like Matt said, but you're getting cheapness and simplicity at the cost of privacy, because now your address is everywhere. And you could even be your own registered agent again. But, you know, we tell story after story of customers and tenants and online purchasers that are pissed off and they come knock on clients' front door and people don't like that. So if that's your concern, you don't want to go with that option.
Yeah.
So what we've done for clients is we've been doing this for years. We have a virtual office address. We do mail forwarding, and clients around the country, around the world, we have clients literally around the world that'll list our law firm address as their business address. And they use that for mailing. And so we have a couple options there, and you can talk to our staff. Very affordable, $150 a year, and you get all your mail forwarded to you wherever you're at in the world. And we even have some scanning options and a digital mailbox and all this stuff that's very, very affordable. And that becomes your mailing address for the public, the law firm. And if anybody wants to find you, they got to go through us, which is sweet. And so your home address is not listed out there. And I've had clients, especially in the Seattle area recently, go, well, I'm just going to go get a P.O. box. All right, that's cool. Go get a P.O. box. And then they come back 2 weeks later. It was $300 for a year of a P.O. box. I'll take your mail forwarding. So you may think a P.O. box is cheap or a FedEx store, suite number, blah, blah, blah. But really look at the cost issues that you're facing and shop around. You may come back to our mail forwarding service, which is cool. But but don't think a P.O. box is cheap anymore. That was 20 years ago. They really, you know, post office is trying to make
money. Yeah, and they're sometimes, you know, $40-$50 a month. But when you start adding that up over the year, it's like, that's a lot of money. Yeah. So yeah, watch out for that. I mean, in our mail for, just so you know, it's $150. You can have up to 3 companies on that a year. And that, so as you're looking out there and pricing that and saying, all right, how much do I value this privacy? Because I think for a lot of people, it's like, well, I'm in for that, but how much am I going to pay for that? How much am I really willing to pay for that extra level of privacy?
And don't forget the registered agent thing. So Matt, under that option, what do they do for the registered agent though?
Okay. Now, if you're saying I want to stay private and I want a PO box, or I'm going to do a mail forwarding service, like Mark mentioned, you're going to need one other thing. You're going to need a registered agent, because while you can be your own registered agent, if you're in the state where your company is, your name and your address is going to be listed. So you could use a registered agent service. Yeah, it's got to be a physical street address, so you can't just drop a PO box or even a mailbox, you know, et cetera address. The states are getting much better at policing those and rejecting those if you do that. So, but you can use a registered agent service. We have it in all 50 states for our clients. Then the 4 states we have the law firm address is listed. And the other 46, we're listing a registered agent company we work with exclusively and have a good relationship with. So, but that office address is listed in those states, and then we're listed as your registered agent or our registered agent company. And that's where legal notices are served. And then of course you're notified. But if you go that option, essentially, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're going the privacy option, you need 2 things resolved. Someone else is the registered agent, so your name and address doesn't have to get listed. And you need a mailing address, which you can solve with a PO box if you got one. Or maybe you have an office address you can list that you know, sometimes I got a real estate broker or agent client that's like, well, I got kind of an office address I can use for mail and stuff. I'll drop that on there. Or of course, you know, use us for the mail forwarding service and use the law firm address.
Yeah. And cost-wise, Matt didn't say, even LegalZoom and the big companies out there, they're all about $125 a year for the registered agent. So when you look at the two, a privacy strategy is really going to run you about $275 a year. You should really pay no more than $300 a year. That's going to get you mail forwarding, a private mailing address or virtual address with scanning and a digital mailbox, and then also a registered agent. So $200 to $300, that's going to give you the privacy. Now, then you're still going to go home at the end of the day, and we're going to take a tax write-off, not only for those fees that you paid to have privacy, but you're going to get a tax write-off for using your home address on your federal tax return. So again, there are 2 different issues, but you get privacy with that as well.
And let me say this, I just checked as you mentioned LegalZoom, because we're always surprised that the pricing there. Registered agent service starts at $159 a month, or sorry, $159 a year for registered agent service with LegalZoom, starting at higher price depending on certain states. Yes. So we're already $40 less.
Jeez.
You know. Awesome. Just keep that in mind.
It drives me crazy. So many people are like, yeah, Mark, I didn't call your law firm because I knew it would be more expensive, so I went to LegalZoom. 9 times out of 10, you check all the boxes at LegalZoom, you're more expensive than us. It's insane.
Right.
It's crazy.
Well, there you have it. Okay, well, let's...
Okay. Oh, now.
Do you want to get into the tax topics or anything else on just set up an address.
No, I think that's good. So now home office. Here's an important point. When you file your federal tax return, there's a number of federal privacy issues that go on. Unless you give your tax return to a bank for a loan, and then there's banking privacy issues, no one's going to see your address on your federal tax return. The federal government and or the banks would get in big trouble if they disclose that. So you may use your mail forwarding address on your tax return, but I don't worry about it. But as a side note, Matt, here's another interesting issue. This happened to me last week. I had a client that got a census notice at their home, and it was for a business that he did not want sent to the house. Now, in fact, I should say it was sent to another business address that he didn't want it at. So it wasn't like this home clandestine husband-wife thing. It was at his business office, and he got a census notice. And I had him and the business advisor call me really upset going, I'm trying to do privacy here. What the heck's going on? And they were kind of mad at me, and because we were their address and everything. And then, of course, I said, did we set up the entity for you? And he said, no, we came to you after and changed the address to your law firm and got your registered agency involved. And I said, oh, who filled out the SS4, the original application for the EIN with the IRS? And the client said, me. And I said, oh, so you set up your own EIN, huh? Yeah, I was trying to save a few dollars. So then I said, which address did you use with the IRS? My other business. So the IRS, who is in bed with the Federal Census Bureau, which I did not know, I learned this last week, they were able to share the actual address on the original application for the EIN. So he was freaking out that this competition business was aware of his other business now, and it was kind of a big fiasco. And it was lesson learned in a lot of ways. Again, doing your own entity, not doing it right from the beginning, and putting the wrong address on some formation documents got him in big trouble.
Yeah. I just got stalled out there when you said you basically said the IRS is in bed with the Census Bureau.
They are.
Boy, that's a bed you don't want to come close to.
That's not
interesting going on over there. Nothing interesting.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's get into now with the IRS. Okay, because you're starting to dropping this out with the IRS, and obviously, if you're going for this privacy when you're picking your office stuff, you also have to have consistency with what you're doing to the IRS. Now, let me just make this point though. That information with the IRS, I think, as you stated too, Mark, is it's not publicly available. No one's going to be able to search and find that. But the government itself knows it. So it's sharing within its own entities like the IRS, you know, who's in bed with the Census Bureau. But no one else is able to get that information.
Right.
So if you've done that and you're having a little freak out moment, don't worry. No one's getting online or able to access that information with the IRS. However, with your state, this is where it's a little more critical. When you're filing the articles to the state, or even sometimes your statement of information, or your annual renewal forms, those addresses that are listed there are the stuff that can be publicly available. And in most states, it is. It's searchable. You can even just Google it within, 30 seconds and pull it up for your own company. So that's where we're really trying to focus and keep addresses and stuff private for those that are going after that and seeking that and want that privacy protection.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Okay. Now for the home office write-off, there are two options. And I want to everybody listening, all of our clients at least take option one. Now, some accountants listening, and we have a lot of accountants and tax preparers and enrolled agents listen to our show, and we want to thank you. We're trying to provide the best content we can. And if we ever are out in right field, we want an email from you. We're not perfect. If we tick you off with a particular strategy and you think we're too aggressive, let us know. But we are.
Or if you got something cool we're missing, like you got a cool strategy we're missing, we definitely want to know that too.
Yeah. And I mean, if you, We're going to be aggressive. I won't lie to you, but we don't want to be too aggressive. But here's the new law that came down about 2.5-3 years ago with a court case on the East Coast. There was a doctor that was going home at night, doing his email, reviewing charts, making phone calls, and he took the home office deduction. Now, many of you old-time accountants would say, you can't do that. You can't have a principal office across town and a home office for the same business. You can't do it. It's literally not allowed in the code. Well, this doctor said, I'm going to take him. I'm going to take the tax IRS to tax court. And he did it, and he won for all of us. He took one for the team, for all of us people. So he won this case, and the IRS, the court, the tax court said, you know what? He is doing business at home. He should be allowed to take this write-off. We're going to allow what's called the administrative office exemption, meaning that as long as you're doing admin duties at home for your other business where you primarily do business during the day, you can still take the home office write-off. So all of our clients that do have a principal place of business, brick and mortar somewhere in town, that for privacy may be their address, but they still come home at night, we're taking the admin office deduction. And let me add, Matt, if I may, here's, you know, an important distinction too. If this doctor had rental property, I would be taking the home office for the rental property and not even messing with this.
Right. Because
you can only take the home office once. So what business are you going to take it? Choose one. And many of you listening, you have two or three businesses. Well, let's take home office for the one that makes the most sense, that's the less risky, and then don't worry about it. Just take it, you know?
Yeah.
So
I like that. And I love an aggressive taxpayer that takes one for the team, because that makes sense, right? And so many of us who are in business, who may be in that scenario, I mean, you're doing that, whether you like it or not. You know, you're the business owner, you're working nights, you're working weekends, you're doing it at your home. And we want to be able to have an expense for that cost that we're bearing by doing that at our home.
Yep. Now, once you decide I'm going to take it, then you have to say how much. And there's this is where the two options come into play. There's this simplified method and the standard method. So all of our clients at least take the simplified method as an admin office. And that's what I'm saying, all of our clients, because everybody has at least an admin duty situation going on. And the simplified method allows you to take $3 a foot up to 500 square feet for $1,500.
And that's it was $5 for 300 feet.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
$5.
Yeah.
For 300. That's one of
the two. Yeah. It's the same total amount in the end.
Yeah, it's $1,500. Sorry. You know, tomato, you know, whatever.
Yeah. $1,500 in the end.
Remember, the tax code, folks, is about, you know, 4 feet wide, double sided, a 10 font. So be patient with me and Matt. Okay. So it's $1,500 a year. And some of you may go, that's not a big deal. Hey, it adds up. If you're in a 30% bracket, Fed and state, bare minimum, you're saving $500. So $500 isn't chump change. I'd love a $500, you know, buck thrown in my lap. So take the home office admin for at least $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the standard is where you do the square footage thing in proportion to your overall apartment, your studio, your house, whatever it is. You say, I've got a 2,000, you know, or 2,000 square foot apartment or a 5,000 square foot house. Here's what the square footage of my home office is. You do that math, and then you take that ratio of 10 or 15%, usually in that range, and then you multiply that by your rent or your mortgage interest or your utilities or your property taxes, all these things. And it's not either or. I mean, you're just going to take all these different methods, and you're going to take a percentage of your actual costs of your home or apartment in this percentage amount, and that's going to be your home office deduction. So that's the standard method. And a lot of clients in more expensive areas with bigger home offices are going to get a better deduction. So you're not going to take the simplified method. But I want at least everybody grabbing the low-hanging fruit of the simplified method.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think on the tax side, anything else we need to talk about, though, in terms of home office? One thing keep in mind too, I'll just note, obviously you're expensing if you're using a virtual office service or a PO box or the mail forward service or registry agent service. I mean, those are all just regular business expenses you're going to write off in the business itself. It just gets a little tricky when you're getting at home, how you expense things at the home. That's where the kind of the nuance goes, so to speak, in the rules. But like Mark said, I think everybody, if you've got a rental property, a business, you've got to have a home office deduction somewhere. Take advantage of it. We know you're working at home and there's an area of your home set aside where you do that work. Definitely keep that in mind.
Now, Matt, I just remembered, better touch one more thing, and that is the S corporation. For any of you out there operating as an S corporation or an LLC taxed as an S corp, which many, many, many of our clients are, it's a huge strategy. It's wonderful. Can you have a home office? Yes, but we're going to do a reimbursement procedure. So we're going to take a rental expense in your S corp and reimburse you for the same amount that your home office deduction would have been. It's going to reduce your chances of an audit substantially because you're not even taking a home office quote unquote deduction. It's just a rent deduction in your S corp on your 1120S. Yeah. And you might even be a little more aggressive, but the point is you want to be able to account for what would my normal home office deduction be. And then it's a reimbursement from your corporation. You don't have to claim it as income individually. It's a tax deduction in the corporation. And so you're getting this journal entry completed at the end of the year for your home office on your S corp. It's a great write-off. Now, what most accountants out there listening, you know what you need. You want to have an accountable plan in the minutes of your corporate records. For all of you, this means, again, the importance of corporate maintenance. If you have a corporation or an LLC, even an LLC, you should be doing your annual minutes. We have our little company maintenance program, very affordable. Once a year, you do your minutes. In those minutes, we have a paragraph that says, I hereby am taking the home office deduction. I have an accountable plan, which is what the words the IRS wants to hear. So if you ever get audited, you can say, I have an accountable plan in my minutes. It's a reimbursement procedure. Here's the math. Boom. So you're totally audit proofed. You're getting an awesome deduction and it's tax-free to you, but a tax write-off in your corporation. So that's another technical point some of you might appreciate, but I'm getting a little geeked out here. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah, the geek meter is at full capacity. I think we need to wrap it up here. So kind of a topic many of you may not expect, but every business owner's got to encounter it and know the options. And we want you to be thinking about this from a couple of different angles because so many of these issues are not just one-dimensional. This is a tax issue. This is a privacy issue. This is just a practical administrative issue on what addresses you want where. So we just want to give you as much information so you can make the best decisions and get the best tax write-offs in the end. So
I love it.
Thanks so much for listening in on this topic, Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And let me just interject, Matt. Next week we have a cryptocurrency, a gold, silver trading type strategy. Tell us everybody what it is next week. It's really kind of cool.
Well, yeah, we've done a show, maybe it's been a year now, maybe on cryptocurrency. We're just going to kind of rediscuss cryptocurrency. What are the investment opportunities? What's kind of the risk you should be looking at there? And we'll have an excellent guest on who's been an expert in that field for the last couple of years. And it's really for that next week. It'll be on the podcast. And of course, make sure you sign up for the newsletter so you get announcements of other upcoming episodes and prior episodes. And always make sure to check out Refresh Your Wealth as well. Thanks so much for being with us. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.